It's time to take the quiz.
5 questions, 5 minutes a day, 5 days a week.
Take the quiz every weekday at thequiz.fox and then listen to the quiz podcast to find out how you did.
Play, share, and of course, listen to the quiz at thequiz.fox.
From the heart of our nation's capital, Washington, D.C., backed by the trusted voices of Team Fox. A clear, fresh voice cutting through the noise to tell the truth. It's the Guy Benson Show. Filling in for Guy Benson, here's Harry Hurley.
Welcome to the Guy Benson Show with Christine, Dylan, and Justin. It's an honor to fill in today for the great Guy Benson, who did a tremendous job. He always does when he works Fox and Friends, which he did this morning. He did the show this morning with Brian Kilmeade, Ainsley Earhart, and Lawrence Jones. Did an absolutely fabulous job. You can follow everything Guy Benson, GuyBensonShow.com. The Guy Benson Show offers listeners with smart, because he is smart, fast-paced political and cultural insights from a right-leaning perspective. The Guy Benson Show blends major newsmaker guests, a steady stream of Fox News stars, which you will be hearing from on today's important edition of The Guy Benson Show, because it's a big news day. And of course, guys, informative monologues and your perspective as guest listeners and callers make the program possible. This is The Guy Benson Show. There's so many jump-off points that I could begin the program with today. I'm so tempted. I mean, obviously, the Supreme Court, New York v. Trump, and, of course, the protests, if you want to call them that. It's horrible. You know, when you're yelling death to America, death to Israel, and the incredible, horrible anti-Semitic activities that are going on in our country. You know, somebody's got to figure out how in some of the highest, alleged highest learning institutions in America, this kind of absolute garbage is going on. It is just terrible. And did you happen to notice? I mean, you know, you ever hear the term AstroTurf protesting and this kind of thing? All the brand new tents, they're all the same, brand new and same color and just perfect. And all the professional printed signs. This is not some organic type deal. You know when young Americans, for example, and I'm saying that because it's at colleges, you know when it's that kind of thing. But I'm going to open with that. All of that is going to come up during the Guy Benson Show, all of it, and then some. And great guests. Don't miss a minute of today's program. It's an incredible program that Team Christine has put together. I'm honored to be here today to do the easy part. The area that I want to open up with is because when you have these opportunities, even if they're softball interviews, because right now, if you think about it, we have a teleprompter and we have note cards. They are the president of the United States, because each and every time our elected president, Joe Biden, ventures from that, whether it's the teleprompter just the other day, when he was with the union team members and he said with no emotion, no powerful cadence of any kind, 4 more years, pause. He is Ron Burgundy, Anchorman. If Veronica Corningstone puts it and loads it into the teleprompter, Joe Biden is going to say it. He would have said blank you, Santiago, had it been put into the teleprompter. I tell you, he's got to be very careful who's ever loading that teleprompter, because whatever it says, he reads it. He said the word pause. I mean, it's almost unbearable what's going on. But how about this one? This one was super extra special. And boy, I'll tell you, Howard Stern, he's definitely lost something off his fastball. It was terrible. I mean, when you have the sitting president of the United States, I will say that Howard Stern, I mean, he's getting ripped, you know, by everybody for this interview. But he did accomplish something that no one else has been able to accomplish a couple of times, because you don't get an opportunity you know, if you see these press conferences and they're rare, somehow President Biden is able to read the answer to a supposed question he doesn't know what. Let's go to this news person or that one. They all know they're getting picked. Biden has to know the questions because you can't read your answer to questions you don't know what they are. Now, you know, I know Karine Jean-Pierre has like the fattest three-ring binder in the history of the known universe, but he doesn't have that. He's got a couple of, you know, they have Joe Biden on top and no cards and says things like Kamala Harris is smart. I mean, you walk in, you sit down, you get up, you leave. I mean, these are words are on these cards. Somebody better get concerned at some point. You know, there could be a nexus to why Afghanistan blew up and Russia attacked Ukraine and Hamas attacked in a terrorist attack, a brutal terrorist attack, Israel. I mean, there's a reason that all this is going on. And I think it has a lot to do with the great teleprompter and the great note cards of the United States of America. So here he's in this interview with Howard Stern. And Howard Stern actually got President Biden to say he's going to debate President Trump. I think it's one of the biggest gaffes of Joe Biden's presidency. Let me tell you why I believe that. I don't think Joe Biden, circa 2024, can really competently participate in a debate. You know, there are rules in these things. The Presidential Debate Commission, you come out, there's a notepad at your podium. If you've ever watched them, you will see that very quickly the candidates, they start writing. And it's a smart thing because you got a lot on your mind and the pressure of the debate and stuff's going to get brought up. And you're writing down things that you want to make sure that you remember to bring up. And you're going to see that's going to happen to some extent. They're going to be writing very, very quickly because Joe Biden's not going to have his pre-printed Joe Biden note cards. I believe it was always the intention of the Biden campaign, his handlers, for him to say, you know, I'd clean him up. I'd clean his clock, you know, because he always talks about knocking people out and corn pop and the rusty chain and all these stories, hairy legs and, you know, all of it. But I don't believe Team Biden wanted President Biden to agree to a debate. My theory was always he would finesse the answer and say, you know, well, there's time for that. And, you know, my opponent has a lot of problems and, you know, he might not even be around. You know, he's doing jokes like that, like my opponent's busy these days and things like that. But today he said, I'll debate Trump. That was not with conditions, because I always believe they were going to say, you know, they're hoping to convict President Trump so then they can say he's a convicted felon. Come on, you got to vote for me. It's like when he was interviewing with Charlemagne Tha God, and that's THA, Tha God, when he was doing that interview and President Biden said, well, if you don't know you're voting for me or Trump, then you ain't black. Charlemagne Tha God, he didn't like that very much. Not at all. Bad answer. Very bad answer. So I believe that the strategy was going to be, we just cannot dignify this. My opponent is a convicted felon, and I just can't debate him. I want to debate him. You know, I'd clean him up, you know, the floor with him, mop up the floor with him, whatever the expression is. But I can't do it. I can't do this to the office of the presidency. It's not about me. My ego, I want to do the debate. I'm ready to do the debate. I can't debase the office of the presidency by debating a convicted felon. I know that was going to be the play. Now, obviously, if you're following New York v. Trump, it's going very bad for Alvin Bragg and Judge Mershon. They haven't even shown that there's a crime. I think you could say, yeah, I did that. Yeah, I did that too. I did that. I did non-disclosure. Yeah, yeah. Keep going. I'll just keep saying yes, yes. They haven't shown a crime. They didn't even introduce the crime until the trial was underway. I've never seen anything like that. But this Howard Stern interview, if you didn't like it, that's one thing. If you didn't think there was, if you thought it was softball, and a lot of people do, You have, of course, the New York Times really blasting President Biden for an entire presidency of not giving interviews. You know, that's in a representative republic. That's not the way you do things. The American president has to put himself out there. And you've got to be willing to face the press. This is why when you see them looking like rabid animals, yelling and all over one another, and then Biden does that smile that is out of one half of his mouth and just walks away. He doesn't answer anything. The New York Times decided at the 3 month and what, or 3 year and 4 month mark of the Biden presidency, that they were going to call him out for an unprecedented lack of media access during his entire term in office. And in their statement, they said, quote, for anyone who understands, and by the way, there's great reading on this in the New York Post today, and I'm sure there's great coverage at foxnews.com as well. Quote, for anyone who understands the role of the free press in a democracy, it should be troubling that President Biden has so actively and effectively avoided questions from independent journalists during his term. Quote, the president occupies the most important office in our nation, and the press plays a vital role in providing insights into his thinking and worldview, allowing the public to access, or rather assess, his record and hold him to account. Quote, end quote. A little bit more. Quote, Mr. Biden has granted far fewer press conferences and sit-down interviews with independent journalists than virtually all of his predecessors. I wouldn't even have to put a qualifier in there. There's nobody that compares to this. Less than all. Not virtually or, you know, any type of, you know, softened wording. It is true, quote, that the Times has sought, and this is the New York Times, of course, has sought an online record interview with Mr. Biden, as it is done with all presidents going back more than a century. If the president chooses not to sit down with the Times because he dislikes our independent coverage, that is his right. And we will continue to cover him fully and fairly either way. And let's be honest, the Democrat media, they have been, I mean, there should be campaign finance reports required to be filed. It should be called in-kind contributions. It's been terrible what they've done. You know, the watchdog, the fourth estate, whatever you want to call the media that the watchdog is supposed to bark. I mean, they just completely allowed this to go on for an entire presidency. And now in the last months, they're going to come out and call him out. What did it bother you at 6 weeks in? Did it bother you at 6 months in? Did it bother you at a year, 18 months, 2 years, 2.5, 3 years? It bothers you now at 3 years and 4 months? So it's a little bit rich for me to be able to take that thou protests now after being such an enabler and not telling the American people that, you know, what's going on here, this is not normal, trying to make abnormal normal. The press secretary who has the audacity to say about, we just don't get to see the president the way that they do, and that nobody on the team can keep up. You wouldn't believe it, she says, Karine Jean-Pierre. No one on our team can keep up with President Biden. I mean, come on. Nobody's buying that. He wears special shoes. He exits the plane from the bottom. He walks like a mile to get to where he's going to sit on the plane because that's worth it. Then what's going to happen just walking up the normal? It's a tall flight. I'll give you that. But come on. I mean, you know, our lion eyes see what they see and our ears hear what we hear. And now all of a sudden, look, I'm not complaining. You want to come on board late and wrong? Come on. Welcome. There's plenty of room. Because the American people deserve the truth about this. More on this. We're not done with this. A little bit more right after the break. We'll be right back. This is The Guy Benson Show.
Filling in for Guy Benson, it's Harry Hurley.
From the Fox News Podcasts Network.
I'm Ben Domenech, Fox News contributor and editor of the Transom.com daily newsletter. And I'm inviting you to join a conversation every week. It's the Ben Domenech Podcast.
Subscribe and listen now by going to foxnewspodcasts.com.
Justin is bringing the bumper music today on the Guy Benson Show. With Christine Dillon and Justin, I'm Harry Hurley, filling in for the great Guy Benson. All right, so you listen to me tell you my thoughts about the Howard Stern interview with the president. Nothing better than hearing directly what this interview sounded like. And I think a good starting point, because I'm really pleased. I believe the American people want debates, and they deserve debates. And this is an opportunity where you will have the current president and the immediate past president. It's only happened one other time in history that a president that was president and lost has come back to try to win the presidency in the very next election cycle. So it is such an interesting contrast to how people felt 4 years ago versus how they feel now. So on the issue of would there be debates, I didn't even think Joe Biden in his current condition, because I think there is an issue there. I'm not qualified to say what it is, but something's not right. You know it when you see it. So I don't have to, you know, have a degree as a medical doctor or a psychology degree or anything to say, hey, you know, I don't know what it is, but I know it when I see it, and it's there. So listen to this, though. This is great, because how do you go back from this now? You fake like you didn't say this? Cut six, Justin.
I don't know if you're going to debate your opponent.
I am somewhere. I don't know when. Yeah. I'm happy to debate him.
Well, there you go. I am somewhere. I don't know when. Well, the Presidential Debate Commission has debates planned, and they need to move them up a little bit, because with all the early voting, don't wait until late August or something. President Trump wants the debates to be moved up so that people will see the debate before early voting begins, because we no longer have election day. We have election season now. Well, let's continue. You probably didn't know some of this about President Biden, about his football career, for example. Justin, cut one.
But for example, I remember starting off playing Catholic League football, CIO football.
By the way, I don't think a lot of people know that you were a star receiver in high school. You were like the first string guy. You were the guy who caught the ball.
Runner-up in state scoring, you know.
Wow.
But I was a runt.
Have you ever heard Howard Stern do such gushing? I know sometimes with some of the celebrity interviews, you know, we get a little maybe gushing, but this is embarrassing, actually. I'm embarrassed for him to listen to this interview. I really am. But there's more. Cut two.
You were at Syracuse.
I was at Syracuse. It's a good law school.
Right.
But I thought I was going to go to either Cornell or no, anyway.
Yeah, that's the old excuse. When he doesn't know what he's saying, he just says, anyway, you know the thing, that kind of thing. Did you know that Joe Biden, that women sent him salacious pictures? I didn't know that till the Howard Stern interview. Justin, cut three.
I got put in that 10 most eligible bachelor's list.
Because you were a United States Senator, you were a catch.
And a lot of lovely women, but women would send very salacious pictures, and I just gave them to the Secret Service. I thought somebody would think I was, and I just gave up.
Wow. There you go. Things you just never knew before. When we come back, we have a wonderful guest, a legal and political analyst from Fox News, Greg Jarrett, author of Trial of the Century, joins us next on The Guy Benson Show.
Filling in for Guy Benson, here's Harry Hurley.
Welcome back to the Guy Benson Show with Christine, Dillon, and Justin. Honored to fill in today for Guy, who did a great job this morning guest hosting on the Fox and Friends program. Wonderful job. And Guy will be back on Monday. Let your heart not be troubled there. On the Guy Benson Show Newsmaker Hotline is Greg Jarrett, one of my absolute favorites. What can I tell you? Legal and political analyst for Fox News, author of his great book, Trial of the Century. It's almost like a primer. It's just filled with what I think is going to prove to be things he wrote in advance that are going to go exactly as Greg sees them in advance, because he knows the law, and he knows garbage when he sees garbage as well. Greg, welcome to the Guy Benson Show.
Harry, good to be with you. Thanks for having me on.
It is a pleasure, and I'm really glad to have you. Manhattan DA Alvin Bragg, as a layperson, it seems to me that his case is falling apart. Day eight, I haven't seen a crime yet. I don't know if you have. And this is looking pretty bad, I think.
Well, cross-examination is the engine of truth. That's an old adage. And I think it was proven correct today when finally the defense got an opportunity to cross-examine David Pecker, the ex-publisher of the National Enquirer. And I think prosecutors were sitting there uncomfortably as important truths finally met a bit of sunlight. You know, Pecker, under cross-examination, confessed that his tabloid routinely suppressed negative stories and promoted positive ones because it was profitable, not necessarily because it might influence an election. And he also agreed that other more mainstream news organizations do the exact same thing. Some were cited. And as far as paying for stories and sometimes killing them, well, that was commonplace, said Pecker at the Enquirer, especially when celebrities were involved. So, you know, it was not unique to Trump, as the prosecution had been claiming all week long.
What did you think when you hear Rahm Emanuel brought in by name, Arnold Schwarzenegger, Tiger Woods? This starts to look like they're bringing in all these people that have no involvement with this at all. But I guess, as you very aptly just said, when you can show that whether it's an NDA, a non-disclosure agreement, or any of these other things, like you mentioned, they call them catch and kill and whatnot, it's not unique. It's not limited to Trump, but all these other players get brought into it.
Well, you know, that's the cost of being a celebrity, I suppose, Harry.
Yeah.
You know, but the important part is that Bragg and his team of prosecutors spent the better part of a week concealing from the jury the truth. You know, the irony and hypocrisy here should be lost on no one. Bragg is accusing Trump of suppressing information to win an election. But the DA has been suppressing vital testimony to win his case against Donald Trump. And Pecker also revealed on cross-examination, and this was important, that Trump didn't want to buy this salacious story peddled by, you know, Karen McDougal, former Playboy playmate, that she once allegedly had an affair with Trump, which should surprise no one. And, you know, then candidate Trump said, you know, I'm not going to pay for this. And besides, you know, scandals like this always come out. So on its own, the Enquirer doled out money to Dougal. But, you know, Pecker insisted that cash wasn't the primary focus of the agreement. She was actually hired to compose advice columns, blogs, and other articles for the tabloid. You know, bear in mind, McDougal has nothing to do with the criminal charges against Trump.
Exactly.
He didn't pay any money to her. Yet prosecutors convinced Judge Juan Marchand to allow it under the theory of similar bad acts. Why does that phrase sound familiar? It's the same dubious tactic that triggered this week's reversal of Harvey Weinstein's sex conviction. You know, smearing somebody with irrelevant prejudicial information.
Yeah, so he gets a new trial.
Yeah, Weinstein gets a new trial. And, you know, what Bragg is doing here, but he doesn't care, is creating reversible error. But he doesn't care if it's later overturned. He
exactly.
just wants a conviction so that Democrats can call Trump, you know, a convicted felon in
there
the run-up to the election.
There you go. That was exactly my comment. That's why I love you so much. That was exactly my comment earlier. That's what they want. They desperately want to be able to say Biden is going to say it all the time if they get their way. I'm really hopeful that they don't get their way, because this is very, very bad for our country. Judge Marchand, tell me what you think of this. I know though I'm not a lawyer, I'm a layperson, I know the reason that Marchand is saying he's doing this, because they blame Trump. We can't tell you who your witnesses are going to be because of you. I mean, everything is just so crazy about this. I never saw in my life that a defendant went into a trial not knowing what the charge was against him. They laid the charge out like on the floor, on the fly, after the trial began. How is that? How are you as a defendant? I thought the whole deal was that you would know exactly what you're charged with, so your lawyer or lawyers can plan a strategy to defend your case, your innocence. And then on top of it, we can't tell you who the witnesses are because you're the reason we can't. You know, you're going to, I guess, do mean tweets or, you know, say mean things. So you can't know who the witnesses are. Greg, I've never seen anything like this before.
No, neither have I. You know, in the Bill of Rights, the accused is entitled to know the specific charges against him. And yet, for more than a year after the indictment, there's been this mysterious crime. Oh, Trump committed a misdemeanor business records violation, but he did it in furtherance of another unstated, uncharged, mysterious crime. And when the defense, quite naturally, demanded a bill of particulars, you know, this judge, Juan Marchand, said, well, you can just give them a general, broad answer, which Prosecutor Bragg did, offering four possibilities. Well, at that point, any honest judge who's half decent and half competent would have said, that's not enough. Pick and choose which one. But Bragg didn't do it, and Marchand didn't make him do it.
Amazing.
And it just, you know, it underscores that this judge, in my opinion, is not only hyper-biased against Trump, but I think he has limited knowledge of the law, and he strikes me as a friend of mine who once tried a case in front of him, said he's a bully. And I think we've certainly seen that in his unconstitutional gag order against Trump.
Greg Jarrett, on the Guy Benson Show, we're talking about day eight, trial day eight of New York v. Trump. This, I don't know how it's going to go. You know, they only had, I guess it's New York law. I wasn't aware of it till this trial. Only 10 peremptory challenges. So there's two attorneys on the jury. I know that in recent years, in my home state, it was a point of emphasis. And I know in New York, where they encourage judges and attorneys, you know, to be jurors. That didn't used to be the case. We don't know. I didn't, you know, look into their backgrounds enough to know, you know, do they like Trump? Do they hate Trump? I remember a juror was almost on the picked by Marchand, allowed to be one of the 12, not even an alternate, one of the 12 who basically said that on their social media, Trump should be in jail. That person almost got on the jury. I mean, so I don't know how the voir dire went. They only need one, as you know, but what do you think about all this?
Well, look, just judging by the political tendencies of, you know, the voters in Manhattan and the jury pool is drawn from that, it's not looking good for Trump. I think it was 87% voted against him.
True.
And just the jury selection alone, where among the pool members, the vast majority of them said, can't be fair to Trump, don't like him, won't be fair. They didn't want to be fair, and a lot of them got kicked off. I think what you worry about, Harry, is the Trojan juror,
there you go.
who isn't telling the truth, who hates Trump. And
yeah, you're talking about John Cusack. You're talking about John Cusack. You know the movie?
Yeah, the movie. It was a John Grisham book they turned into a movie.
It's incredible. It's absolutely incredible, and he swung the whole jury. What do you think about two attorneys being on the jury, Greg?
Well, when I was trying cases back in the 1980s, I never wanted a lawyer on the jury. Why? Because they, you know, they always think they're the smartest guy in the room. They have a tendency to commandeer a jury, and they often, because they're a lawyer, get picked to be the foreperson. And that's like rolling the dice. I mean, you know, you never know what a lawyer will actually see in your case. You know, here there's two lawyers on the jury. Maybe the defense had this attitude that this hocus-pocus case brought by Alvin Bragg is smoke and mirrors, and it's going to fool the average non-lawyer. And maybe one or both of these lawyers will see through the charade and actually, you know, put the facts and evidence against the law and see that there's no crime here. I mean, it's been a week with Pecker on the witness stand, and he offered no direct evidence that Trump ever told him to kill stories. But even if he did, where's the crime, Harry?
Exactly.
It may seem tawdry, but it's not unlawful to quash stories. It's not illegal to pay somebody for their silence. Suppressing stories and promoting stories, I mean, my Lord, that's been done, as I pointed out in one of my columns, for 234 years. I go back to the 1800 election. Thomas Jefferson, John Adams, Alexander Hamilton. It was the worst mudslinging smear campaign of slander ever by all three of them.
Oh, yeah, they printed books.
And it was
books.
Done to influence the election.
That's true, by the same standard. They printed
not
books,
a crime.
The unspeakable character of John Adams, and it was a bound book. And, oh, my God, we think it's tough, you know, tough rumble now. Oh, my God, unbelievable. And, by the way, there's a great FoxNews.com opinion piece, Bragg's Hocus Pocus Case, by none other than our distinguished guest. Check that out. It's excellent. Now, we can't let you go. We've got about 3 or 4 minutes tops. We can't let you go without a comment about the fantastical day before the United States Supreme Court, the oral arguments. It's fascinating now that we get to hear them. You didn't, you know, forever you didn't. And I think we learned a lot. It seems as though a majority of the court, I thought maybe Amy Coney Barrett was the most squishy, but it seemed like at least five, and maybe it'll be six, we'll see, seem to believe that at least some immunity for a president for official acts is necessary. They even Brett Kavanaugh said a dangerous precedent if presidents can prosecute their rivals. A lot of stuff came out of that. What are your thoughts about it, Greg?
Yeah, Kavanaugh really nailed it when he said, you know, what's to stop a creative prosecutor from using a vague statute to criminally charge a president, especially a prosecutor from the opposing party? Well, that's exactly what Alvin Bragg is doing now, and Fannie Willis in Georgia and Jack Smith in Florida and Washington, D.C. And Gorsuch also warned about, you know, prosecutors misusing the criminal law to target political opponents. Even Alito jumped in and said, you know, this is a slippery slope where we're now going to see, if we don't stop this, the loser in an election always getting prosecuted.
Exactly.
I mean, that's what these Biden Democrats have done. They've weaponized the law for political purposes and electoral gain. It's classic lawfare. And I think that in the immunity case yesterday, you're right, Harry, it's pretty clear that they're going to grant some form of immunity because they focused so much on the Nixon-Fitzgerald case four decades ago that gave presidents immunity in civil lawsuits with certain conditions. So I think the court will extend that to criminal prosecutions.
Greg, we have 1 minute. Put on your crystal ball. How do you think New York v. Trump ends?
There's no telling. It's hard to know. If the jurors honestly and objectively and impartially examine the evidence and don't get fooled by this magic show that Alvin Bragg and his prosecutors are putting on, it should be an easy acquittal. I mean, what Bragg has done is taken a dead business records violation and attached it to a dead state campaign finance law that doesn't even apply because it's a federal election. And besides, on the business record thing, you have to show an intent to deceive. Well, how else are you going to account for the payments made, arranged, and paid for by your lawyer? It's a legal expense and legal services. So it isn't even a business records violation. I'm pretty sure they're going to put an expert on the witness stand who's going to say, well, Yeah, you're supposed to account for it this way. Hillary Clinton accounted for it this way when she paid for the phony dossier by using a lawyer to funnel the money.
She actually
did.
Yeah, right. She did what they're saying is criminal. And there you go. Greg, it is always great to visit with you. Thank you so much.
My pleasure, Harry. Take care.
Be well. Greg Jarrett. And we'll be back. This is The Guy Benson Show.
Filling in for Guy Benson, it's Harry Hurley.
Welcome back. 56 minutes past the hour. Wow, it's flying by today. And we told you it's a busy news day. Let's close out on something that's very, very important, and it is affecting all Americans. And that is that GDP is now anemic. 1.6% GDP, gross domestic product. That's really bad. The Federal Reserve Board, they once were looking at upwards to 4 rate decreases. And now we may get one late in the year. That would be a Biden gift. It'd be a fake out. And that's what happens. You know, that they don't do that for who they don't want to do it for, but they'll do it for Biden. I predict a late 25 basis points, maybe 50 basis points, one time only, just to make something look like it's not. And might not get any rate cuts. Energy, food, I don't have to tell any of you. You know what's going on. You know that the cost of how much more these essentials are. I filled up the other day. It was $75, and I wasn't on empty when they put the gas pump into my car. Pretty wild, but it's not looking good. It's not looking good. They usually say if you look at the price of a gallon of gasoline, you can tell whether a president will be reelected or not, that you don't even have to look at anything else. If you take New Jersey, it's about $3.70 for a regular gallon of gasoline and about $4.40 for premium. That's what people know. We'll be back. This is The Guy Benson Show.
A new generation of conservative talk. Right here, right now. Fair, fun, and backed by the trusted voices and reporting resources of Fox News. Fox News. You're listening to The Guy Benson Show. Filling in for Guy Benson, here's Harry Hurley.
Welcome back to The Guy Benson Show. On The Guy Benson Show, Newsmaker Hotline is Liz Peek, Fox News contributor and an outstanding columnist at FoxNews.com. Follow Liz's work. I'm telling you, she gets it right. You can follow her, her Twitter handle, X, formerly Twitter. Let's do the obligatory. Liz Peek, L-I-Z-P-E-E-K, at Liz Peek. Liz, welcome to Guy's program.
Hey, I'm really happy to join you. Thanks, Harry.
Great to be with you, Liz. And, you know, there's so many places we could begin, but let's begin with these just utterly reprehensible anti-Semitic so-called protests that are just spreading like wildfire across the college on various college across the country at various college campuses. What are your thoughts about it?
Well, look, I think this has been decades in the making. First of all, anti-Semitism has been on the rise in the United States and in Europe. There have been sort of warning articles written about this, and basically everyone has ignored it. It's astonishing to me that in my lifetime, anti-Semitism can again become something that is not exactly applauded, but certainly tolerated. And now we have sort of this rationale created by the pro-Palestinian group to excuse being anti-Semitic. And in the beginning, you know, sympathetic students were worried about the Palestinian people in Gaza as Israel hunted down the Hamas thugs that killed all their people. And then it kind of morphed into just out-and-out anti-Semitism. And I think we all should be shocked by this. But again, for decades, these trustees and administrators of our colleges, and it's not just the elites, it's pretty much all colleges, have veered really left, and they've hired people who are like-minded. They have no enthusiasm for diversity of opinion. You really can see it in surveys of faculty. Not only are they 80 to 90% Democrat, or as they describe themselves, liberal or very liberal, they also really do not express any enthusiasm for hiring people who aren't. I mean, so that is really bad, and that has to change. I think that is sort of the core element, because the kids coming out of these schools don't know anything about history. They certainly don't know about Israel's founding and the Holocaust. I mean, surveys have shown an appalling ignorance of what happened to the Jews during World War II. And, you know, I cite in an article I just wrote, because I find it kind of unbelievable. If you look through Yale's course offerings, I think there were 191 courses, maybe 119. I think it was definitely over 100, talking about gender. And there were 16 talking about the Holocaust in World War II. Wow. So, I mean, it gives you some flavor of where the
priorities.
Faculties are, you know? Yeah, where the
stunning.
Priorities are.
Yeah, stunning. Liz Peek on The Guy Benson Show. Liz, we know they're chanting death to America, death to Israel, hideous things, absolute beyond belief. George Washington University, a sign that reads, final solution, the call for the extermination of Jews, direct Nazi, not even trying to thinly disguise. I mean, right there, front and center. This is how bad this is going at the moment.
Yeah. And it's just hateful, and it's hate-filled. Yeah. I mean, I again, where are the adults on these campuses? If someone is carrying a sign like that, that is hate speech. That should get you basically booted from campus
exactly.
and suspended. You know, it has been said by many people, and it really is true. If these were black students, if people were marching around saying, go back to Nigeria or hang all blacks or whatever, or gay students or almost any other category of students, people would be bringing in the National Guard in a nanosecond. So why is it that again, these administrators and the faculty in some of these schools are turning out to protect the students, forming chains or living chains to keep the cops from coming on campus and doing their job, which is to get rid of outside. Getting rid of outside agitators is part of the issue here, right? I mean, it's not all organic. It's not all students. There are people being paid to stir all this up. And it's really, you know, we won't know for a while why they are doing this, what the end mission is. I do think that all these left-wing protest movements, if you want to call it that, which go back to Occupy Wall Street and various others, kind of all have the same ingredients, right? They want chaos. They want to basically make America look weak and divided and incapable on the world stage. So clearly there are foreign influences at work here. I find myself incredulous that someone like George Soros is definitely, I mean, there's no question, he is definitely funding some of this stuff. George Soros, a Hungarian Jew who came to this country and made a fortune, what is his purpose? I cannot imagine.
And you know, they call it AstroTurf, whatever you want to call this type of protesting. Some of it's students, but it's a whole lot more than that. You see the matching brand new tents. You see the printed collateral material, the big signs. You know, and I was giving thought to this. The Columbia president, who should already be fired or should have resigned by now, she had an opportunity to put this thing down early. But she played the card that it was free speech. And that's not free speech. Anti-Semitism, death to America, death to Israel, all of this, that's not free speech. She was weak.
That's right.
She condoned it. She called bad stuff protest. And therefore, it then just went on steroids. And now look, now you have universities that won't be having graduation, like the University of Southern California. I don't think they are the only one, and that they will not be the only one. And you have all these other things now that are happening all over the country. Do you believe, Liz, that this is going to continue to ramp up? Because they keep being given the red line you know, deadlines, and they don't stop. Like, you got to be out of here, off the lawn, you know, by tomorrow. Oh, it's tomorrow. Now you got three more days. It's craziness. So is this going to continue for an extended period?
I think it will. My guess is we're in about the fourth inning or third inning of this game. And the reason is, let's face it, if indeed the root of it is what's going on in Israel, it's not over in Israel. The fate of the Palestinian people is far from decided. Israel is still going to be trying to move on the remaining Gaza, I mean, Hamas, people that carried out those horrible savage attacks on October 7. There is no easy two-state solution. My guess is if Israel ends up in an occupying nation kind of role, even if it's temporary and even if the world sanctions some control being put on this part of the world, it's going to be even worse because people will sort of say, well, I told you, this is, you know, Israel's land grab or Israel's trying to exterminate the Palestinian people. You name it. I don't know what they'll argue, but I think that makes the situation worse, not better.
Liz, go ahead. Yeah. Finish that.
And I think the problem is we don't have Joe Biden as a leader standing up and saying enough.
You just took that out of my mouth, but I want to do a follow up and then we'll go to President Biden not speaking on this and how wrong that is, how failed that is. You're so spot on that. And I swear it was the next thing I was going to say that we must remember to mention. We think alike. But I want to go back to something on this in terms of why it goes on, why it's continuing. And it is because, and I never thought I could ever say this. I don't want to say it. But there is a pro-Hamas wing of the Democrat Party. I believe this is continuing because of the weakness of the American president, who is afraid to say what needs to be said because he thinks he will lose Michigan and Minnesota. That is even, I want to wash my mouth out with soap for even thinking like that, but that is what this is.
Yeah. I don't think you should wash your mouth out with soap. I think you're telling the truth.
I am, but it just is a terrible thing.
It is. It's appalling. And yes, is there a pro-Hamas wing? Well, we know that after the barbarism on October 7, there were some legislators who clearly thought that was okay.
I know.
And they're all Democrats, of course.
Yes.
And there is, after all, a pretty sizable Muslim Arab American community in Michigan. They protested in a way during the primaries by not voting for Biden, instead voting what was the alternative in Michigan? I can't remember.
Uncommitted sort of, or something.
Yeah, something. Yeah. Non-committed or something. Yeah. And that was enough to lose him the state. So he is scared to death of that. He will do anything. I do believe this administration will do absolutely anything to get Joe Biden reelected.
Agreed.
Why? Not because he's such a fabulous president, but because they have an agenda and they don't want to put aside their agenda.
Well, I believe they actually love it. The people that are really running this country, they love the fact that we do not have an engaged president. This is a level of power for unelected people that you rarely get to see unless the president has some kind of heart attack or other health issue. And then first ladies and other people, you know, over the course of history, as you know, you're a great writer and study of history. Things have happened, but they pretend that he's the president, but he really isn't. And now I want to bring him up because you touched on it. And then we went to a follow up of the last point before getting to your last point, which was President Biden not saying what the American president should be saying to the country. It is indefensible and it is reprehensible.
It is, but honestly, it's not surprising. I think it is a fair statement, and I've tried this out with various like-minded friends in the last 48 hours, and they agree that there is no core to Joe Biden. He has no strong belief set. I mean, if you say, well, he's a strong Catholic, no, he's not.
No.
I mean, he basically applauds 9-month abortion at any time during a 9-month pregnancy. He is in favor of gay marriage. I mean, none of these things really are part of the Catholic
doctrine. And by the way, Liz, to prove he has no core, when he ran with Barack Obama, he was opposed to it.
Yeah, I mean, he is whatever today's political demands make him.
Exactly.
And I sometimes think, well, isn't that true of all politicians? I think Ronald Reagan knew exactly who he was and what he believed in. He believed in small government. He believed in freedom, et cetera.
Yep.
Can you really make a statement like that about Joe Biden?
No.
I don't think so. So
you can't.
To get up and say something, he's the guy, by the way, who made a big show of having a federal anti-Semitism kind of all-agency work effort trying to rid the country of anti-Semitism. So this is his moment. If that was real, this is his moment. But where is he? He's had several public encounters lately. He's had several opportunities.
And
say,
he knows,
hey,
Liz, he knows he's going to have protests at the Democratic National Convention.
Yeah.
If he doesn't pander to the pro-Hamas wing of the Democrat Party, he is going to have big, big problems. But the truth is, he has bigger problems because it's unacceptable what he's doing. Less than a minute, but I want to get this in. I hear there was an attempted coup to get rid of Karine Jean-Pierre. Tell us what you know about this in about 45 seconds.
I probably don't know much more than you know, but it does appear that, yes, this hapless, inept press secretary whose job was on the line, and they wanted her to step down because – you know what? You cannot fire a gay, black, first ever press secretary who has those characteristics, and she wouldn't do it. So they're cooked. She wants to stay through the election. My guess is she will be there through the election. And she is dreadful at her job. By the way, this is not a new thing. It has nothing to do with her race, her color, or anything else. It's just she's really bad at her job.
She is particularly terrible at her job.
Really is. She doesn't understand the issues. She pretends not to answer, understand any questions that are challenging of the president or the sort of talking points of the White House. I really think she's terrible. But you know what? I'm delighted that she's there because it is sort of a symbol to me of the ineptness and the just complete failure of the Biden White House. As much as they take on bold initiatives, they have not got the intellect to really do so.
So true. Follow Liz Peek, foxnews.com, and on Twitter, X, at Liz Peek. Liz, great to be with you.
Thank you for having me. Take care.
You too. We'll be right back. Don't go away. Much more. It's a busy news day on The Guy Benson Show.
Filling in for Guy Benson, it's Harry Hurley.
Welcome back to The Guy Benson Show with Christine, Dylan, and Justin. Harry Hurley filling in today for the great Guy Benson. I really hate this topic. It's so sad, and you know, we're living in tough times right now where people are hurting financially and all this depressing stuff that's going on with the protests and everything. But during our show prep, Christine and I and the team, Team Christine, we talked about this woman in the Netherlands who chose to celebrate her 34th birthday by dying on her 34th birthday by her choice, euthanasia, in other words. Christine, you and I, we are in the same camp on this. This is a tough one.
This really is. And I, you know, Guy has covered this as well, because I know Canada had a plan out. I think it was called MAID. And that was basically to allow, you know, euthanasia for the mentally ill. They've postponed that. It was supposed to start March 17th. And we had talked about this a lot. And I saw this story pop up. And she does. She has depression. She has, this woman has an eating disorder. She has autism. I mean, she said by the time she was 13, she really just wanted to not live. So it's a slippery slope, though, because like you could say, okay, this woman has suffered, put herself out of her misery. But then what's to say that somebody that really could benefit from, say, therapy or medication and hasn't exhausted those options, this is just the easy way out? Or what about governments now getting involved? Because, like, don't forget, like, in Canada and over here, like, over there, that's like, you know. Well,
yeah, what if they started to say, hey, you're this age now, this could cure you or keep you alive, you know, and treat you, but you're not going to get it. I mean, this becomes, to me, monstrous.
Right. What if people start, like, what if doctors start pushing this because maybe it's cheaper than keeping that person? You know, like, there is just a very, very slippery slope.
It could normalize something that is abnormal and just make it that this is just an acceptable, like you're in an a la carte menu at a restaurant. You can choose to live or you could choose to die. And she chose yesterday to die on her 34th birthday. And I think your slippery slope comment is spot on. About 20 seconds, Christine. Closing comment. Take us out on this topic.
I mean, God bless that woman. I don't want to speak ill of people that are, you know, tortured inside and mentally ill. Like, and this is awful. This is a horrible topic to talk about. But when the government get involved, that's not for me.
And executive producer Christine, was she competent to even make that life decision? This is The Guy Benson Show.
Filling in for Guy Benson, here's Harry Hurley.
Welcome to The Guy Benson Show with Christine Dillon and Justin. It's an honor to fill in for the great Guy Benson, who was outstanding this morning on Fox and Friends, and Guy will be back on Monday, so not to worry. On the Guy Benson Show hotline, you talk about a man who knows how to make an entrance. My former boss, the 45th, and I do believe the 47th president of the United States, I think it's really going to happen, just said his name 60 seconds ago to the world. And don't take my word for it. Justin, prove it.
Days that we've all been sitting in this courthouse. This is all a Biden indictment. It's in order to try and win an election, political opponent, and nothing like this has ever happened. 8 days. As you know, the economy's falling apart now. Now you're seeing it very little growth. It's going to get worse. Oil prices are going up. You have the college campuses all over closed down. Our country's going to hell. And we sit here day after day after day, which is their plan. Because they think they might be able to eke out an election, but I doubt it because the poll numbers are very good for us. I just want to say that I've invited Biden to debate. He can do it anytime he wants, including tonight. I'm ready. Here we are. I invited him to the courthouse that he has us tied up in, his administration. This is all being done through Washington. It's all a well-coordinated attack on a political opponent. But I'm here. I'm ready, willing, and able. And if he wants, I'll do it on Monday night, Tuesday night, or Wednesday night. We'll be in Michigan, a state that he's destroyed because of the auto industry. We're not going to have any jobs left in Michigan. No auto jobs left in Michigan. They're all going over to China and other places with his ridiculous EV mandate, electric vehicle mandate. But we're willing to do it Monday night, Tuesday night, Wednesday night, Thursday night, or Friday night on national television. We're ready. Just tell me where. We'll do it in the White House. That would be very comfortable, actually. But you tell me where. But we're ready. He's obviously not showing up now. We heard nothing. But he said today that, I'd love to debate, but he won't debate. I don't think he'll debate. Maybe he will. Maybe he will. I'm not sure he has a choice. But that's the story. So here we are. We're ready, willing, and able. And we don't see him, and I don't think he'll be here. But maybe next week he'll do it. I doubt it, but maybe next week. So I just want to thank everybody for being here. I know you have to suffer through this like everybody else. Nothing has come. This is a case that should have never been brought. Every legal scholar, every legal expert, Andy McCarthy, Jonathan, Andy, every single one, Jonathan Turley came out with a scathing report on this trial today.
Welcome back. There it is. The immediate past president of the United States calling Andy McCarthy out live from the courthouse of New York versus Trump. Now, Andy, you're a star. You're a Fox News contributor, former assistant United States attorney for the Southern District of New York, best-selling author, Ball of Collusion, The Plot to Rig an Election and Destroy a Presidency. But that's got to be pretty cool when the immediate past president and possibly future president mentions you the way that he just did. I'm glad that this happened right before we were having you on The Guy Benson Show. I thought it was pretty cool. What did you think?
I'm just glad I'm a good guy today, Harry.
That's right.
By tomorrow, I could be an imbecile by tomorrow. So
impossible. You're a good guy. You're always a good guy. Let's get your take. Day 8, New York v. Trump. How's it going, Andy McCarthy?
I'm concerned by the way it's going, actually, from the defense perspective. And I say that as someone who thinks this is just a preposterous case. But, you know, there's things going on in there that lead you to believe that, I guess the best way to put it, Harry, is we're getting the trial, and the people who listen to Fox News and watch Fox News are getting the trial through the filter of our legal analysis, right? So I get to talk about it from time to time. Jonathan, Kerry, Kupek, John Yoo, you know, the whole roster of really good people I think we've had on to analyze this.
Yes.
But that doesn't mean that's the way the jury's getting it. And what I'm worried about is it seems to me that the judge is letting Bragg suggest to the jury that there was an illegal conspiracy to bury uncomplimentary or potentially politically damaging information. In other words, letting the prosecution suggest to the jury that that's illegal when, in fact, it's not illegal. And the other thing I'm really disturbed about is there was a lot of testimony today about David Pecker's understanding of whether he had violated campaign law or not.
Right.
Including the fact that he has a non-prosecution agreement. And his testimony, apparently, that he now believes he committed a campaign violation or at least, participated in one. The testimony about his state of mind as to the campaign laws is completely irrelevant and should not be permissible testimony in the trial.
Agreed.
The only state of mind that matters in the case, because the only defendant in the case is Trump, is Trump's state of mind. And Pecker's state of mind about whether the campaign laws were violated is no different from Michael Cohen's guilty plea to two campaign finance violations that Judge Merchan actually correctly ruled last week couldn't come into the case because they were irrelevant. So I don't understand why that testimony is being allowed. I think this is going to allow Bragg to argue to the jury that there was an illegal conspiracy to bury information, that these guys all knew that it violated the campaign finance laws, and that when the business records were falsified, it was to conceal that crime.
This is Andy. This is very interesting because you're always objective with this stuff, and I totally respect your acumen. What I'm basing a lot of mine, I've been busy today, so I didn't get to follow as much today. I had my show, and I'm filling in today for Guy.
Sure.
So I haven't had a chance to follow today's proceedings. But other than whatever has happened over the last few hours, I've been watching a lot of the Democrat, I should say reading because I don't watch them, reading their comments, the Democrat media people, and they're not happy about this case. They don't seem to feel that it's going very well. So they're almost saying the opposite that you're saying.
Well, we'll see how the commentary about today goes. My take, Harry, just for what it's worth, is I thought Pecker was a good witness for Trump as the first witness called by the state because he really didn't hurt him.
Right.
And I say that as someone who takes the position that that the plan to catch and kill information, the plan to, like, purchase the rights to these women's stories.
I mean, Andy, for example, if he tells the jury, and he did, I did this for Rahm Emanuel, I did this for Arnold Schwarzenegger, I did this for Tiger Woods, I've done it for others, it doesn't that tell the jury that this is something that was done? We can all have our own opinion whether it's unseemly, if we don't like it, but can't the defense just say that we don't stipulate to any of this, but even if it did happen, nothing that has been presented to this jury rises to the level of a crime by Donald Trump.
That's a perfectly good argument. Here's the problem with it, Harry. It's not an argument they should have to make to the jury. The judge should already have made a ruling that it's not illegal.
Right, but they got to play the hand they're dealt with, though, Andy. Merchan is against Trump. It's obvious. How about this? Is Karen McDougal being in this thing any different than the it was narrow, but the 4-3 verdict of the appeals court that overturned Harvey Weinstein? He's getting a brand new trial because that judge let all kinds of crap in on the case that shouldn't have been let in.
Well, I said the same thing at the time in connection with Trump's E. Jean Carroll case.
Yeah.
Where the civil case where Judge Kaplan allowed a bunch of propensity evidence in to try to shore up E. Jean Carroll's, you know, largely uncorroborated story. So I think this is very problematic. Here's my thing, Harry. I worry that the judge is going to get Trump convicted the way he is presiding over this case. They're having to take on a lot of legal argument with the jury that they shouldn't have to because the judge should be keeping all this out of the case.
Yeah.
And I do think the case would get reversed on appeal if he gets convicted. But by the time that happens, I mean, when did Weinstein get convicted?
Like 2020. I think like 3-4 years ago. Yeah.
Right.
So you're
right. It's going to be cold comfort to him if his conviction gets reversed 3 years from now. Right.
Yeah, exactly. Very, very good point. Now, of course, there's more to go. I think one of the other things that's been extremely unfair, they didn't really charge him until the trial began. I've never heard of that before. And then the idea of getting so little advance notice of who the witnesses are going to be, you know, usually you have a witness list and you can do the prep that you need to do and all of that. I mean, this Mershon, he's a beaut. I mean, he's really – and then, of course, he blames Trump for the reason that we can't give you that. And, oh, we'll give it to your attorney, but you can't know. I mean, this is – this. I agree with you. Even if he is convicted, it will be overturned. It will be overturned on appeal. But by then, they would have gotten everything they wanted out of it, including a conviction if they're successful to that degree. And, of course, you take the opponent of the sitting president – off the campaign trail Monday, Tuesday, Thursday, and Friday for 6-8 weeks or more, it's devastating.
Yeah, I think so. Now, I think, you know, no one wants to be indicted, but to the extent you can make lemonade out of lemons, I think Trump's done a good job with that. For example, I thought the statement that he made yesterday morning where he pretty much ignored the trial but lit into Biden about the lack of growth in the economy and all the various, geopolitical places where he's dropped the ball. I thought that was very effective. He spent like 4 or 5 minutes doing it. It was rat-tat-tat. And because of the circumstances, he has a soapbox that gives him a lot of press attention.
Exactly.
So I think that was good for him. But, you know, can you keep that pace up? I don't know.
Yeah, well, he can. But it is like the law of unintended consequences. They want to accomplish something. These courthouse things, when he went to the bodega, that was very effective. The shame of this is Judge Mershon should have never allowed the ship of fools conglomerate of misdemeanors long since expired the statute of limitations, bootstrapping it to some federal election thing. I didn't think that a DA like Alvin Bragg could bring about a federal type charge. How is this even happening, Andy McCarthy?
Yeah, well, this is I wrote my weekend column about this that comes out tomorrow at National Review. I think the unseen collusion between the Biden administration and Bragg's case. I mean, there's a lot of seen collusion. This guy Colangelo obviously came from the Biden Justice Department. But the unseen collusion, Harry, is that the Federal Election Commission and the Department of Justice have exclusive jurisdiction in federal law over the enforcement of the campaign finance laws. Justice Department on the criminal side, the FEC on the civil side.
So why are we talking right now?
Well, because the Biden I would argue that if this was any other local prosecutor in the United States and the defendant was anyone other than Trump, the Justice Department would be going crazy. They
Correct.
Would be plastering the state court and the federal courts in that jurisdiction with motions to stop the trial
exactly.
on the grounds that the prosecutor doesn't have any authority to enforce federal campaign law. But the Biden administration and the Justice Department is letting it happen because it's Trump.
Exactly.
I can't see any other. You know, I worked in the Southern District in New York for a long time. The idea that the federal government would sit idly by and do nothing when they conducted a thorough investigation under laws that only they have the authority to enforce and decided not to charge someone, and then a state prosecutor who is essentially usurping federal authority comes in and indicts the guy, and the theory is federal campaign finance laws, the Justice Department would go crazy over that.
Of course. Andy, final minute. I know this is total speculation, but it's all we've got for right now. What do you think of two attorneys being two of 12 jurors? What are your thoughts about that?
You know, it really depends on who the lawyers are. You can't, like, make a categorical statement. I think, you know, to the extent that the law that the judge is prescribing is cutting against Trump, it could help them to have lawyers on the jury. On the other hand, they wouldn't have gotten on the jury unless they satisfied the prosecutors that they could decide the case based only on the evidence received in court and the judge's instructions on the law. So if that's where they're coming from, it's not going to make any difference that they're lawyers. I don't even know what kind of lawyers they are.
I don't either. If Trump loses, he's going to appeal, of course. If Trump wins, or it's a hung jury, I don't know. Do you think Alvin Bragg would say we're retrying right away?
No.
I mean, we got to get this. If it's hung jury or acquittal, it's over, correct?
I think so. It's a garbage case.
Now, when it's over, if it goes that way, because I'm rooting that there's got to be one out of the 12 that won't agree with this, should action be taken against Mershon and Bragg? And we only have mere seconds here.
Should it happen? Of course. In New York, would it ever happen when it's a pervasively politicized system? No.
There you have it. Andrew McCarthy, you're the best. Have a great day.
Thanks, my man. Take care.
Thank you, sir. You are terrific. We'll be back. Don't go away. This is The Guy Benson Show.
Filling in for Guy Benson, it's Harry Hurley.
Ah, yes. Welcome back to The Guy Benson Show. On behalf of Christine, Dylan, and Justin, my name is Harry, and it is an honor to be able to fill in today for the great Guy Benson, who was awesome today, guest hosting Fox and Friends, and it is my esteemed privilege and honor to fill in and guest host his program. Guy will be back on Monday. We wish you a great weekend, of course, from the Guy Benson Show team. Team Christine, all the way. And you know the expression, it couldn't happen to a nicer guy. I don't wish this on anyone. They kind of wish bad things on us, I think. But I just, my heart won't, you know, be mean like that. So I don't relish the fact that Congressman Adam Schiff, who I think is a reprehensible, horrific member of Congress, and he might, I just hope somehow Steve Garvey in this current environment can pull it off. It would be wonderful. Adam Schiff would be knocked out of the Congress because, of course, his House seat would have been safe as can be. The Senate seat is likely safe because, you know, obviously, California is ridiculously Democrat. But you never know. You just never know. But what happened to Adam Schiff, you don't wish this on anyone. Thieves broke in to his car, and he was in San Francisco for some kind of event. And, of course, the plans changed because his clothes, his stuff, was stolen. Schiff's car was in a garage, a parking garage, and his suitcase, it seems like Democrats and suitcases, if you remember that other guy from the Biden administration, the colorful dressed fellow that liked other people's suitcases. And he got a second chance, actually, but then they didn't give him a third chance. Schiff lost his suitcase, stolen, in San Francisco, which, like a lot of great cities, has been destroyed. It's a shame, isn't it? This is The Guy Benson Show. We'll be right back.
Raise your glass to the Guy Benson Show Happy Hour, brought to you by the Finnish Long Drink. Finland's most popular alcoholic beverage is taking America by storm. Visit thelongdrink.com. And now, filling in for Guy Benson, here's Harry Hurley.
Welcome back to the Guy Benson Show with Christine, Dylan, and Justin. Let's do this. Standing by on the Guy Benson Show Newsmaker Hotline, one of the greats in America today, Leo 2.0 Terrell, Fox News contributor, podcast host, civil rights attorney, author, former school teacher. That I give you high marks. I'm a former school board member. High marks for being a teacher. And I think one of the most important things, and why I say 2.0, from our mutual friend Sean Hannity, who nicknamed you. I need a red hat, Leo. I need the Leo 2.0.
Right.
Please. I want to put one in my silent auction for my charity. I'll buy them. I love seeing you when you're in your Leo 2.0. Sean Hannity, though, I got to give credit where credit's due. He nicknamed Leo 2.0 because Leo was at that point in time new and improved because he was a reforming Democrat turned Republican. Leo, one of the great decisions of your lifetime.
Oh, are you kidding? It's fantastic. I'm happier now, and I look back 4 years ago, and I'm telling you right now, smartest move I ever made. The Democrat Party is a disaster. I don't even know what it is, but it certainly wasn't the party that I grew up with, and I am very, very happy being what I call myself a Trump Republican.
And it's true. And like the great Ronald Reagan, and President Trump has said this as well, you didn't leave them. They left you.
Oh, God. What is it? I mean, what is it? I mean, it's been hijacked by the extreme left. It's Democrat in name only from a historical standpoint. It is. I don't know what it is.
I mean, look at what they're doing right now. And I understand Biden sees the math looks really bad. Don't everybody out there in the Guy Benson Show universe, don't even pay attention to the popular vote. It doesn't matter. It's coming down to a handful of states. And Trump has buttoned down and locked up all 232 electoral votes that he had in 2020, which means if he wins Pennsylvania and I'll just throw Georgia in, I think he's going to win both. That's 270. And Trump's going to win other electoral votes in the battleground states. So Biden knows, his whole team knows, that they have to pander to the Hamas wing of the Democrat Party. Leo, can you believe I just said that? There is a Hamas, pro-Hamas wing of the Democrat Party. No one can deny it. They can lie, but they can't deny it. And they're so radical that this is what it's become. This is what it's come to.
Oh, I agree with you 100%. I mean, this so-called Michigan strategy, ignore the Jewish community. In fact, throw the Jewish community under the bus to win Michigan is outrageous. The Democrat Party abandonment of Israel and the Jewish community in this country is an outright. I don't even know how to describe it. I'm so angry about it because as a civil rights attorney, what are we doing on these college campuses? I mean, I went to law school at UCLA, and they've been hijacked by this Hamas takeover. And I just find it offensive. Back to the Biden administration, it is just so sickening. I'm sick when I hear the term, oh, First Amendment speech. Are you kidding me? This is violence. The First Amendment does not protect the outright misconduct, crime-ridden activity of this Hamas group that has hijacked the Democrats.
And when you say that, Leo, I mean, such things as death to America here on American soil, that's not free speech.
No, that's not free speech at all. That is to intimidate. That is threatening. That is to harass. And I'll tell you right now, I don't think people really understand it. I don't think 90% of those kooks out there who are protesting understand what Hamas is, what they have done in Israel, what they would do to America, and this death to Israel, death to America. We are next. And yet you have these people who have been drinking the Kool-Aid, thinking that, they're liberators, there's a resistance, and you have a nut, I don't want to mention her name, Susan Sarandon, out there denying what happened October 7th. This is crazy.
What do you say about Karine Jean-Pierre? I will say in short that she is the worst. It's always hard to say the worst press secretary of all time, but I want to say that. But I'll at least say she is the worst press secretary in my lifetime. I think she is terrible, and she's brutal for this administration.
Well, when you think about it, let's be clear. She's a DEI hire. There's no question about it. She was hired because of her race. She was hired because of her gender. And she was hired because of her sexual orientation. I think you're being kind. She is the worst ever, period. It's horrific. She is not qualified to articulate, to discuss any topic articulating regarding the Biden administration. And I'll tell you right now, she enjoys being horrible. She enjoys being terrified or just terrible. And she's protected because of her ethnicity, her gender, and her race. That, to me, is the insulting part about it. And she stands there every day just basically lying on behalf of the Biden administration.
One of my favorite lies, and I say that with dripping with sarcasm, when she said that we can't keep up with Joe Biden. You should see the Joe Biden that we see. None of us can keep up with Joe Biden. I mean, how does she say that and her head not spontaneously combust?
Because the Democrats, and I'm glad you asked that question, Democrats have no problem lying. And they lie just as if it's the normal course of action. And here's the problem. They're protected by 90% of the media. You and I will call it out. Yep. Some other conservative programs will call it out. Fox will call it out. But 90% of the media looks the other way. They look the other way, and they give them the cover they need. And I got news for you. Between now and November 2024, it's going to get worse. The lies will increase. The misdirection and the basically attack on everything that's great about this country will continue, because for the Democrats, it's all about power and control.
Leo, let me come with a little curveball here, because first of all, I just want to me too that and just agree with you, because I think that is how it's going to be. We will see things we've never seen before. Remember, 4 years ago, it was bottling up the Hunter Biden laptop. It was that letter signed by all those former CIA people and all these different people with great clearances that said that it was all Russian propaganda. If you were on social media, you got delisted or suspended. They would put big placards over your posts to say fact check. I mean, they lied, and they knew they were lying. They lied about everything. Mm-hmm. But here is a crack in their armor. The New York Times has blasted. I know you know about this, Leo, and it's Leo Terrell, for those just joining the Guy Benson Show, the great Leo Terrell. The New York Times is blasting Joe Biden for avoiding interviews. I mean, it took him almost 4 years, year of the campaign, and 3 years and 4 months of this. So finally, in a blistering statement, Sulzberg, the publisher, they're really coming after Biden. And he went after Kamala Harris and said to her, hey, you know, why isn't Joe Biden doing interviews? Could it be that they are sick of the lack of access and how they have gotten away with this for almost a full term, and that they're going to stick it to Joe Biden in the final 6 months? What do you think?
I think to a certain extent, yes, they're sick of Joe Biden. But you know what I think it is? I think they're afraid Joe Biden is going to lose. I still hold out to the notion that Joe Biden may not be on the ballot in November. I'm thinking if it doesn't happen by the DNC convention, okay. But I think the New York Times is sending a signal. They're looking at the polls. Listen, the Democrats' entire game plan was, we're going to destroy Donald Trump. It failed. These four criminal trials, the 100,000 years of potential jail time, it backfired. Donald Trump is stronger than ever, and there's nothing that the Democrats can do. And Joe Biden looks weaker than ever. And the New York Times is basically saying, hey, something's wrong here. And they don't want to basically stay in Joe Biden's corner. So I think this attack on his inability to allow access is a way to say, hey, we're worried not about the Democrat Party, but we're worried about you being able to maintain the White House.
We're visiting with Leo Terrell on the Guy Benson Show. This is a very important part of our interview, Leo, and you as our attorney on the panel, your input here is critical. The Supreme Court of the United States, as you know, they heard the oral arguments. I believe, I'm a layperson, though. You're the lawyer. I believe that President Trump, and he wasn't allowed to be there, which was disgraceful. Shame on you, Judge Mershon. More about him later. But I think that President Trump had an incredibly good day. I think the worst case scenario is that the Supreme Court sends this back to the lower court. So the lower court decision is not going to be upheld. That means nothing happens with this before November 5th. But I think it was pretty clear from a majority of the associate justices, and including the chief justice, so I count at least six or seven, that feel that presidents must have at least a limited amount of immunity. I think Trump had a big win at the Supreme Court yesterday.
Let me tell you, I was privileged. I think it was 5:45 West Coast time this morning. The president called me. this morning. We talked for 10 minutes. And let me just answer your question. It was a very, very good day for President Trump yesterday. In the Supreme Court, your analysis is spot on. I honestly believe the Supreme Court will make a ruling that there is some form of immunity. They will remand this case back to the trial court for clarification as to what issues fall under what they call official conduct, which does receive immunity, and what is personal. And what that means is that there's not going to be a trial in the D.C. case. Jack Smith had a very, very bad day, because I guarantee you he is owed for everything when it comes to the Supreme Court. Supreme Court recognized you can't drag a president into a state or a federal court for conduct while he was acting as president and doing his official duties. And regarding that New York City trial, that's just a dog and pony show. So one of the worst trials. I mean, even on the left, they know it's a bad case.
Yeah, you can
tell. You know what? I'm going to give you the PG version. President Trump does not like the trial judge in New York. Now, you and I, when we have dinner, I'll give you the triple X-rated version.
There you go. I appreciate that.
It's just horrific. He is horrible, and he does not care, because he is doing the bidding of the Democrats. And I know I'm being winded here, but this is what I'm talking about. The Democrats will do everything possible, lie, cheat, turn the courtroom into a political sideshow in order to hurt Trump, and it's failing.
Oh, yeah, they don't even tell them the witnesses. It's like, how do you prepare a case?
I never heard of that.
Leo, did you ever hear of not knowing what you're charged with? They, unveiled – I mean, this Judge Mershon, this is – and Alvin Bragg, they're disgraceful. One other follow-up, though, on the Supreme Court, and then we'll talk about Bragg and Mershon. Mm-hmm. As you know, Leo, there was a Fox News legal panel. The panel, there was pretty much a consensus that a Trump attorney made a mistake by waiving Supreme Court rebuttal. In other words, like, hey, if you have the opportunity to speak, you don't waive it. I kind of think they already thought they won, so less is more. I don't know that I agree that this was some, you know, shame on him moment or big, you know, mistake. I think it was a decided strategy that they didn't need to rebut. I could, again, you're the lawyer. If you have the time and you are given the opportunity to do a rebuttal, do you always take it? As you know, that you don't even have to do an opening in a case, but attorneys do. So what do you think about that? Was that a mistake or was that a good strategy?
Let me tell you right now, honestly, I mean, your analysis on what you heard at the Supreme Court hearing is spot on. I mean, it's going to be a good day for President Trump. Back to the call of your question. I've been a lawyer for 35 years. And when you have the burden of proof, and if Trump trying to convince the court of a change or for granting immunity, and you get a chance to speak, you always take it. Now, there was nothing he could have said in rebuttal to hurt his case. He could have just provided some points attacking the weakness of the state's argument. But I thought it was a mistake. I don't think it's going to hurt him, but you never, ever waive an opportunity to make your case even stronger, even though you think the case is going your way.
Closing minute, Leo, and we can take maybe stretch it a minute and a half. What do you think is going to be – we had the summer of love, as you remember, right before the 2020 elections. Remember, fiery but mostly peaceful protests and all that insanity that was going on, assaulting police officers and burning buildings and commandeering police stations, the whole bit. Now you're seeing graduation ceremonies canceled, USC for one example, and you are seeing these anti-Israel – I don't even think it's protesting. I mean, it is anti-Semitism. It's violence. It's awful. There was someone that was assaulted today at one of them. How do you think this ends? Is this going to be continuing to ramp up? And is this going to be like our new version of the Summer of Love? What is your take on this?
You're absolutely right. Yes. The short answer, to me, it is a blueprint of the Summer of Love in 2020 with the CHOP zone. Now you got these tents popping up, and the number of universities that are involved in this is expanding. Now, the base of this organization, I mean, these are professional agitators, but they have gotten a tremendous amount of support from these Ivy League left-leaning universities. So, yes, it's going to be a Summer of Love part two, and it's going to continue throughout the year. Expect it to happen at the Democratic National Convention. Expect it to pop up because they're allowing it to happen, and you'll see a distinction between blue state activities, like what's going on in New York, negotiating with these terrorists, versus what's happening in Texas and Georgia, where they said, we're not going to allow this. So it's unfortunately going to happen.
Leo, great to be with you, my friend.
My friend, thank you. I love being on your show. I will never say no when you fill in for a guy. It's great to be here. Thank you very
much. Leo Terrell, we will be back. This is The Guy Benson Show.
Filling in for Guy Benson, it's Harry Hurley.
Welcome back to The Guy Benson Show with Christine Dillon and Justin. I'm Harry, and everybody knows, whether you're a huge football fan or not, the NFL is the greatest show on turf. The draft was exciting. It was crazy when the Atlanta Falcons drafted a quarterback, so we have a lot to talk about in the next minute and a half or so. Christine, because I know Guy Benson has announced you as the football expert, you open up, please.
Okay. I already forgot his name, but I think we drafted. Justin, did we draft somebody good?
Yep. You got an offensive lineman, the third offensive lineman taken. So there's a lot of expectation that your boy Aaron's going to be protected.
Okay. So explain to me again what an offensive lineman is.
They block the scary defenders from tackling your boy.
See? They're very important.
So like when he goes, hut, hut, go.
Quarterbacks buy them like Rolex watches and expensive dinners.
They don't
catch the ball, but they make sure that no one tackles behind the line of scrimmage.
Right? Yeah, they protect the quarterback.
Okay, so and now what happens tonight?
We have the second and third round.
Yeah, it continues.
Do they go again, the Jets again?
Yep.
So who do they want now? Or you don't know?
You should know this. You're our expert.
That's fantastic, Justin. You also have to wait to see who takes what. You know, so you have many different plans based on who's available. Like, for example, Justin, who would have believed that Atlanta Falcons would draft a quarterback with their first pick?
It was insane. I'm a big Giants fan, and there was a lot of talk about the Giants possibly moving up for a quarterback or taking a guy like Penix or McCarthy at six. And the gap between them and the Vikings, the other team that really wanted a quarterback up there, it didn't seem like there was anyone past us. And then when the Falcons took Penix, it really just kind of set the draft on fire.
Quarterbacks in recent years are really going high in the draft. I mean, we can say, at least I know the first three this year are quarterbacks. Who would you say has had a good draft, Justin?
I think the Bears really nailed the draft. They got Caleb Williams, obviously, at one, but then they got a top three receiver in the class at nine with Rome Odunze. I mean, that offense is really going to be scary.
Next time we have to do this topic even longer because you're so listenable, Justin and Christine. Christine, you did demonstrate you are the football expert of the Guy Benson Show, Christine.
Yeah, play that ding-dong thing again.
Yeah. That should follow you. That should be your theme walk-up music, Christine.
It kind of sounds a little creepy. I'm not going to lie.
It makes you sound like you are the expert. We'll be back. This is The Guy Benson Show.
Filling in for Guy Benson, here's Harry Hurley.
Welcome back to The Guy Benson Show. Earlier in the program, we spoke with Greg Jarrett, legal and political analyst for Fox News. Here's a portion of our interview. Manhattan DA Alvin Bragg, as a layperson, it seems to me that his case is falling apart. Day eight, haven't seen a crime yet. I don't know if you have. And this is looking pretty bad, I think.
Well, cross-examination is the engine of truth. That's an old adage. And I think it was proven correct today when finally the defense got an opportunity to cross-examine David Pecker, the ex-publisher of the National Enquirer. And I think prosecutors were sitting there uncomfortably as important truths finally met a bit of sunlight. You know, Pecker, under cross-examination, confessed that his tabloid routinely suppressed negative stories and promoted positive ones because it was profitable, not necessarily because it might influence an election. And he also agreed that other more mainstream news organizations do the exact same thing. Some were cited. And as far as paying for stories and sometimes killing them, well, that was commonplace, said Pecker at the Inquirer, especially when celebrities were involved. So, you know, it was not unique to Trump, as the prosecution had been claiming all week long.
What did you think when you hear Rahm Emanuel brought in by name, Arnold Schwarzenegger, Tiger Woods? This starts to look like they've, you know, they're bringing in all these people that have no involvement with this at all. But I guess, as you very aptly just said, when you can show that, whether it's an NDA, a non-disclosure agreement, or any of these other things, like you mentioned, they call them catch and kill and whatnot, it's not unique. It's not limited to Trump, but all these other players get brought into it.
Well, you know, that's the cost of being a celebrity, I suppose, Harry.
Yeah.
You know, but the important part is that Bragg and his team of prosecutors spent the better part of a week concealing from the jury the truth. You know, the irony and hypocrisy here should be lost on no one. Bragg is accusing Trump of suppressing information to win an election. But the DA has been suppressing vital testimony to win his case against Donald Trump. And Pecker also revealed on cross-examination, and this was important, that Trump didn't want to buy this salacious story peddled by, you know, Karen McDougal, former Playboy playmate, that she once allegedly had an affair with Trump, which should surprise no one. And, you know, then candidate Trump said, you know, I'm not going to pay for this. And besides, you know, scandals like this always come out. So on its own, the Inquirer doled out money to Dougal. But, you know, Pecker insisted that cash wasn't the primary focus of the agreement. She was actually hired to compose advice columns, blogs, and other articles for the tabloid. You know, bear in mind, McDougal has nothing to do with the criminal charges against Trump.
Exactly.
He didn't pay any money to her. Yet prosecutors convinced Judge Juan Marchand to allow it under the theory of similar bad acts. Why does that phrase sound familiar? It's the same dubious tactic that triggered this week's reversal of Harvey Weinstein's sex conviction, you know, smearing somebody with irrelevant, prejudicial information.
That was part of our interview with Greg Jarrett. For the full interview, go to GuyBensonShow.com. Coming up next is the home stretch. We'll be talking about, this is going to be so much fun with the team. We're going to be talking about how you load the dishwasher. Get ready. It's next. It's the Guy Benson Show.
It's Harry Hurley.
Welcome back to the Guy Benson Show with Christine, Dylan, and Justin. It's Harry filling in for the great Guy Benson, and I can't wait to hear Team Christine opine about the issue of how to load the dishwasher. And it is a divided America. You think this is just easy. You open the thing up and you pull the thing out and, you know, the utensils go here and the plates and everything go there. This is a bigger deal than some people know. All right. You're the boss, Christine, so you get to go first.
Okay. So I do have a type A personality and I am kind of a control freak, hence why I'm a producer. But when it comes to the dishwasher, there was a Wall Street Journal article talking about how, like, this is one of the biggest fights that couples or families go through, is how you actually load your dishwasher. And I will never understand. I am the gal that I will pre-rinse. I will tell you that. I will pre-rinse and my husband doesn't. And that bothers me. But I'm a gal that's like throwing everything in the dishwasher and just closing it and figuring that water's going to come from every side and you don't need to worry exactly how it gets placed.
Yeah, I don't agree with that. But I have no right to offer too much about this topic when I confess for the first time ever publicly on the Guy Benson Show that I have barely touched a dishwasher in my entire life. And we have always, since we owned our first home a long time ago, we have always owned a dishwasher. So I don't want this to sound chauvinistic or anything, but for some reason, the dishes are the thing that I hate to do. But let me cop to something that's a positive. And Christine, I just learned, will appreciate this. I'm voracious. I am consistent. And my wife, Margie, will back me up on this. I rinse every plate, every cup, every bowl, everything I ever eat from, utensils, I rinse it off completely to where it looks like it's been washed. For some reason, I don't like to wash, though. I can't explain it because I'm not a lazy person. Margie says, why won't you just put it into the dishwasher? So I'm trying. I'm really trying hard, and I've been doing it a little bit lately, but I typically leave almost clean dishes in the sink. Now, Christine, you're not going to like that. You're not going to have anything good
confused.
To say about that.
I'm so confused. I was just talking to Justin as you were speaking. I go, I don't understand. So you're rinsing everything almost
yes.
like it's clean, but then you just leave it in the sink?
Yes.
Oh, that would anger me more, I think.
It seems Margie's Ooh. Not happy about it either, but she's fantastic. One thing I will say, and I'm not trying to deflect because I just copped to the whole deficiency that I have relative to dishwashing. Maybe I just came to a conclusion or a thought of something. When I was a young teenager, I was a dishwasher for one summer at an ice cream parlor, and I think I have an excuse. I was traumatized by it. It was the most difficult, horrible job that I ever had. And I think it was deep repressed until this moment with Team Christine on the Guy Benson Show that I'm traumatized about dishwashing. I'm talking about like nuts that are stuck to the plate and hot fudge and marshmallow. I mean, horrific dishwashing duty that never stopped from the moment you came in until the moment you left. There were dirty dishes being put in, at your sink. I'm going to say that's the reason that I hate dishwashing. Never thought of it until now. But here's the thing we have to get a grip on, and maybe the next administration will do this. The restrictions that have been now put on dishwashers do not clean effectively anymore.
What do you mean?
You don't get as much water. They're all restricted now. They don't work as well as they used to. And that's what I was saying before. I hesitate making this comment because I really don't deserve to make this comment because I don't do the dishes. But I'm telling you, it's true. The new dishwashers do not clean like they used to. It's the Biden restrictions on how much water. It's like the toilets. They flush like barely enough anymore. Everything is cut down. The water pressure in the dishwashers. You haven't noticed, Christine?
Well, to be honest, Bobby does do most of the loading of the dishwasher because he really dislikes how I do that. And it does turn into some sort of tiff every week. So, no, I do. But I do know. Don't forget, we just moved into a new house.
Yes.
And our dishwasher has an app. Our stove has an app. Our fridge has an app. So, like, Bobby can load it or something. And then, like, say you forgot to turn it on. He could just, like.
That's very cool.
Right.
My daughter is so good at knowing the best appliances. She made the recommendation on the one that we have now. It's a very good dishwasher. They just don't clean as well. That's why I like to pre-wash. That way, at least there's nothing stuck on the, if you wind up leaving pasta sauce and all these different things that even harden if it doesn't get right in there and you run the thing right away, then usually you have to run the dishwasher at least a second run.
Harry, I'm completely on your side with the pre-rinse here, but to leave it in the sink after that when you could just, like, very simply put it into the dishwasher.
Oh, no, it's a deficiency. I mean,
it's
I'm copping to it. Now, sometimes the dishwasher is running, so I can't do it then. Or it's full, and then I don't put it in there then. So I don't totally ignore. It is not like it's dead to me, and I just rinse and run. But I've never said this publicly, but that's my that's how I do it. And I know it's not right, but that's my plan.
So I recently moved in with my girlfriend, Hannah. We've literally been living together for only 2 weeks now, and we're both very stubborn about the dishes. We need them to be done every night. Like, we can't have any dishes in the sink.
Love it.
Before we go to bed. So it's kind of a joint effort to do that. I think if I pulled off the move that you are by doing a, what do you call it, a rinse and run? Like, that's just, I would
yeah,
be in the doghouse for
it?
That.
But I will say this at least, and Margie will back me up on this. I do at least rinse them off, and there's nothing. I mean, I don't stop. I let the water get really hot, and we've got the hose thing that really gives good pressure. And it's – I wouldn't call it cleaned because it didn't get the soap and all that. You know, the pods that we use. You guys use the pods, right?
Yes, but Harry – I feel like you've said this already three times. You're really going back to this, that you rinse. But I don't think that does the job. Now, let me ask you a question. It's going to veer off a little bit.
Yeah.
But is this something like you don't do household duties? Like, do you go food shopping ever?
Well, we typically get the food delivered. Since COVID-19, we typically get the food delivered. But I do like, for example, it used to be a very enjoyable thing for me. I would go almost every Saturday morning to Sam's Wholesale Club, and I love shopping. My father loved to shop. I do love shopping, and I will do that, yes.
Now, when you bring the food home,
yes,
do you and your wife have like a certain way of putting it, like stocking it all in the fridge, or do you guys just throw it all in there and call
it a day? No, because we buy bulk, so you can't – you have to be organized. We have a pantry – so the stuff that doesn't go in the refrigerator goes in a pantry, canned goods and things like that, anything that's not refrigerated. We have an area for cereal. We get the big boxes. You know, if you go to the big box store, you know, you can still get some good deals. Cereal, very expensive in those small, like 10.6-ounce boxes. You can get the really big ones with two big bags when you go to the big box store. So we have them in an area. And then the refrigerator, we have two different crisper areas. We have multiple shelf areas. The doors have areas. And, of course, the freezer, which, by the way, we've been going with a freezer that's on the bottom. I don't know what the team thinks about that one, because traditionally the freezer, either if you have double door, it might be on one side or it's on the top. We have a nice size freezer in the bottom, and we also have a full size freezer that is in a different location that is only a freezer. So for bulk stuff. You know, for the summer and grilling and hamburgers and all this kind of stuff. So, yeah, we're pretty organized about that.
That's interesting. We have two fridges, and one has the freezer on top, and that's like our bulk, like, as I guess you would say, our bulk one, or as I like to say, our extra booze fridge.
I love it.
So we're always fully stocked. But our top fridge, it's the two doors, you know?
Like, yeah, yeah. Yeah, I like that. I almost got that. In fact, we did get it, but it came broken. So they wound up, we picked another one, and it had the freezer on the bottom. We have the freezer that's not a chest. It's a full size, like it looks like it's a refrigerator, but it's only a freezer. And that's really nice to have because you can see everything and it holds a lot.
I agree. Now, I'm interested to see young Dylan is a newlywed.
Yes, the newlywed.
I am dying to know how this goes in his home.
Yes, so I've learned that me and Mel grew up a little bit differently in terms of like dishwasher usage, and so I think that kind of influences how we do our dishwasher. But like, she didn't grow up with a dishwasher; everything was hand washed at home. I grew up; I'm the oldest of seven. We had two dishwashers in our house because we have so many. I mean, every single meal we're making 9 plates dirty. So. And I'm the contrarian, it seems like, out of the four of us talking right now, I am not a rinser. I will put a plate in just completely dirty. I mean, I'll knock off, like, food that's on there, but, like, the dishwasher washes the plate, right? Like, why do I need to wash it twice?
But not good enough. Harry mentioned it before. It's just, like, what if you have, again, I'm not the pasta eater, but when you have sauce on a plate... Oh, yeah. And you just throw it in the dishwasher. It's just a mess.
Guys, it's all coming out on the Guy Benson Show today. We're all over the place.
I don't even
this
know.
Is like, this that is sounds... faux pas on top of faux pas, and I'm taking my blame here. I cannot wait till I go home and Margie says, you told everybody what you do. I said, I'm honest.
Well, I do think maybe something opened up here, Harry. I mean, just call me Dr. Christine here, but I feel that you might have unlocked something here. I think maybe the ice cream dishes, you know, really put a stain on something for the future.
I think it's true. And also, like Dylan, I grew up, large family, five children. My family took in other children as well. My parents were amazing. We had a lot of people. We had a house with 13 bedrooms. We had a lot of people. And there was a lot of food and a lot of plates and so on. And we didn't have a dishwasher for a good portion of those years. We did have a dishwasher by the time I think I was an older teenager. But for most of my younger life, we didn't have a dishwasher that I can remember. So but I will tell you what, though. It's so ironic that this is the topic, Christine, because as of late, I've tried to be better and put the stuff in the dishwasher. I've done it several times just recently. So I my name is Harry, and I think I'm recovering. There's a shot here. I think I'm coachable, and I think I can get better. I think I can improve
and become
a better person.
I mean, we can end it here, but Harry, to me, you just seem like the perfect, husband. There's a little crack, and I'm ready for more. What else does Harry not do well?
Well, probably a lot of things, but this could be like the biggest thing I have to confess to, that I don't like the dishwasher and I don't like to touch the dishwasher. I don't like to load it and I don't want to unload it.
Well, if that's your biggest, thing, that I think you're doing very well.
Yes. Thank you. Thank you. What a great topic, Christine. I've enjoyed so much with Christine and Dylan and Justin. Always an honor to fill in for the great Guy Benson, who was wonderful today, hosting Fox and Friends, did a great job. Have a great weekend, and thanks for listening to The Guy Benson Show.
Jason in the House, the Jason Chaffetz Podcast. Dive deeper than the headlines and the party lines as I take on American life, politics, and entertainment. Subscribe now on foxnewspodcast.com or wherever you download podcasts.
Listen to the show ad-free on Fox News Podcast Plus, on Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music with your Prime membership, or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.